I want to thank everybody for coming out tonight. Unfortunately, I'm sort of tired, and I had a tough ride getting here, about an 8-hour, 9-hour trip out of Michigan, and I got in about 2 o'clock in the morning and got about 3 hours sleep and had to come over here on another flight and so forth. So needless to say, I don't have a lot of energy, but hey, the flesh is willing. It's the spirit I'm worried about. Anyway, what I want to talk to you about, and I never go by any script. If you looked at the blurb about what I'm going to be talking about, and if you made any sense out of that, well, that's good. If you made any sense out of it. What I like to talk about is what strikes me. I speak from the heart, and I speak from my experiences. I'm not a professor on sabbatical, and I'm not some politician. And so my thing is to deal with the things that have happened to me and to try to relate that. If you get something out of that, some wisdom, or you think, you know, that it's something that you can utilize yourself, so that's good, because that's what it's about. It's about not passing on the torch, because, you know, you always hear these ageist comments about passing on the torch. Well, the idea is not to pass on the torch, but the idea is to light the goddamn torch and to carry on, you know, the rest of your life. I've been doing this all my life. I've been an organizer all my life. Maybe that's my only distinction, is to have done this, to have suffered because of it, and to have survived. I don't know if Ernesto told any of you that I had been a political prisoner with 2 life sentences inside the federal prison system for 15 years. And I got out of prison because of an international campaign on my behalf by the Anarchist Black Cross and other organizations, but primarily by the Anarchist Black Cross. They put pressure on the government, and in 1983, I was released after 15 years. Thank you. I like to say that my life and what has happened to me is proof positive that you can struggle and you can win, because I was told I would never get out of prison. I was told that I would die in prison. And the warden who told me this, the racist who tried to have me killed, had Nazis try to attack me, who put me under conditions of solitary confinement while I was locked up for nine of the 15 years I was locked up was in solitary confinement under some terrible conditions, and the conditions that have made people commit suicide. So I was in a death camp. They didn't put me in any of the soft prisons that they put the politicians in, those cushy camps, they call them, you know, those so-called camps for the rich. They didn't put me in any place like that, where you can leave whenever you want to and come back and all that sort of thing. Check yourself out. No, they had me under maximum security. So that was one of the things that I learned in being an organizer, is that there's a price to pay sometimes. You got to recognize that there's sometimes a price you have to pay. This is not about doing things on a lark. You don't want to do that. You don't want to be here this year doing it. Next year, oh, I'm tired of this, I'll do something else. It's a commitment. It's a serious commitment. And if you're not committed to doing this, if you're not, in your mind, sure of what you're doing, then it would be better that you did leave, because you'll get somebody killed or someone will be left in the lurch. Somebody might go to prison because of your mistakes, because you're not serious. So this is why it's important. You know, for me as an organizer, this is one of the things I learned. We got a group called Black Autonomy, and one of our programs is called Let's Organize the Hood. And it's a program to try to get youth and turn them into organizers, to get, you know, welfare mothers and other folks that are marginalized in the society, and to turn them into organizers and to deal with the conditions of their life. I'm not talking about some kind of, you always hear some garbage about somebody changed their life and they just joined the church and the system continues to destroy people and mangle people. I'm not talking about that. I don't want this damn system to continue. I'm trying to destroy it. If anybody asks me, what am I? I am a revolutionary. I'm not trying to save the state, and I'm here to say that your leaders, what they call our leaders, they can't save us from anybody who's after our ass. They can't save us. And they're the ones bringing on the punishment and the pain in the first place. People, the rest of the world is mad at this country because of the crimes that the regime here in the United States has committed. If there's any place needed a regime change, this motherfucker needs a regime change. This country is responsible for these crimes, but we have to ask ourselves, how do we reach the people? Yeah, okay, you said, well, we got the truths. We got the message, but how do you reach the people? You got to reach people. You got to be able to connect and communicate with people. You got to be able to go door to door in communities. And you got to be able to talk to folks. You know, you got to be able to talk to folks on their level, not on yours, on their level. I hear all this stuff about class politics, this and class politics, that. I'm from and have lived most of my life in a poor community. I am not out of the middle class. I did not come in the world with a silver spoon in my mouth. And it always intrigues me when I see activists, many of whom are out of the middle class, who have this idea that the masses are coming to us because we've got the truth. They're coming, open the front door. They're coming in a rush, and nobody ever comes. And they don't come because you're not saying and speaking to what they want to hear. You're not talking about their reality. You're not bringing a message to them. It's really important to understand that. You got to be in the neighborhoods, in the communities where this happens. When people are being shot in the streets, don't ask yourself, well, what should we do? You know, this stuff happened in Cincinnati in 2001, you know, where the community, the black community especially, rose up in rebellion. And you had some of the activists, anarchists, who were there, who a few weeks before had some sort of anti-globalization protest. So they write me a letter saying, what should we do? You think we should go out and do something? I said, well, if you don't know that you should get your ass out and do something, then clearly you don't need to be doing anything, because you'll get somebody killed. But the reality is, this is one struggle. It's really one struggle. Now, there may be a lot of fronts to that struggle. I may be from a black neighborhood, or somebody else may be from a Hispanic neighborhood, or a university, a predominantly white university, whatever. But wherever you are, you can still be an organizer. That's really, really important to understand. This is not about sitting around with people who just think like you do. This is about taking your ideas to the world, and you convince people. And you convince people to join in with them. I'm not leading them, but join in. Because people have to do things because they're convinced. Not because you think they should do it, because they're convinced. That's real important to understand. And that's organizing. People mistake mobilizing for organizing. We can get 2 or 3 million people one day to go out and do something. One day. And the next day, they're back out selling themselves out again. So we want to talk about building empowerment on a daily basis, steadily getting stronger, movements that are in the community, steadily getting stronger that can challenge the government. Because we got, I know you've noticed, they call it a crisis of leadership or there's no leadership. Well, the so-called leadership is in the communities themselves. There's already people there. One of the things I learned from when I was in the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee back in the early 60s. And that movement would send one organizer into a community. And that organizer would put him or herself at the disposal of the community. What do you want? What can we do for you in terms of building a movement? And they would build autonomous local groups. And those local groups would be challenging racism in these places in Mississippi, Alabama, and Georgia. But it would be their movement. And if the organizer left, and he knew he or she would leave one day, but it would be in the hands of the people themselves. And that's really important, is to take your skills and put it at the disposal of the people who need it. We don't, you know, there's so many of us here And many have got college backgrounds, and they may come from a privileged existence and all this stuff. And these skills are wasted on each other. Our task is to reach people who don't have this, who have nothing, and yet who need it as a weapon, as a tool to fight against the conditions that they're living under. I'm not saying if they're in prison, if they're in the so-called ghetto, wherever they are, there are people who need this. We need to connect with people. And that is organizing. And that is organizing, I submit. And that is not just mobilizing for one day. I think that the movement I saw with millions of people protesting the war in Iraq was a very powerful statement. But what I'm really concerned about is where do we go from here? When the warmongers say, okay, we're going to defy public support or a lack of for the war. And let's see what they do then. Then we have to take the next step. We have to take the step of, I don't know what you want to call it, civil disobedience. I don't call it that, because I have more in mind than just laying down to stop it. But I think that we need to talk about then something that was talked about originally when they were having the March on Washington, when I was a SNCC. And they talked about the March on Washington. And originally it was going to be an extremely militant demonstration. They were going to go out on the tarmacs at the airports and stop airplanes, lay down on out there and stop airplanes. They were going to shut the city of Washington, D.C. down. They were going to shut down all the government and everything. That's what they were going to do. They were not talking about just going in there and talking about getting a bill passed. It was not limited to that. It was limited to stopping this government from functioning and business as usual. And this is what we have to do. We have to bring this bullshit to a halt. And we have to do this by putting ourselves on the line. We got to be willing to do whatever's necessary, to go out there if necessary and stop planes from flying, or 747, whatever we have to do. We've got to be able to do that. Lay ourselves out there. We've got to be a lion. They used to call it the lion or whatever. We've got to be able to do these things. So it's really important to understand that it's a critical time. See, organizers understand first and foremost the period they're in. Like, I came out of the 60s, but I don't live in the 60s. It's a real important distinction, real important key distinction. Some people, I see them. All they know is the past. I am an organizer today. I'm an organizer today. And my thing is that not only am I an organizer, I'm an organizer trainer to try to give some perspective, because sometimes the strength, the weakness of an organizer that arises in one period is that they're not able to always see the whole picture politically. These people are not functioning from a game plan that they started just with the Bush White House. Believe me. This is something that's been in play for some time. There are always contingency plans. They tell you that. But what is happening is that we're at a new stage where they are effectively waging two wars. You got to understand that. They're not just talking about the war in Iraq or even anywhere else in the third world. They're not just talking about that. They're talking about a war on you. And not just a war that somebody said, take away our civil liberties. They want to stop dissent in this country. They want to be sure that there's never going to be a repetition of what happened in the 1960s when, as they say, there was a crisis of the democracy, which means that more people wanted freedom. First, like my brother Gil Scott Heron says, first one motherfucker wants freedom, then all of them want it. That's a fact. The people were demanding freedom, and you always hear these politicians and these corporate heads and talking heads on TV, they're always talking about freedom, but they never define it. Well, it's like they talk about peace. We want peace. We want a peace of Iraq. We want a peace of Jordan. We want a peace of Vietnam. We want a peace of every country in the world. That's the peace we want. That's the peace they want. And they're always talking about freedom. And they're talking about freedom of the rich to plunder the peoples of the world. Freedom of the corporations to have no restrictions in how they exploit human labor and destroy the conditions that people are in oppressed countries. That's the peace, that's the freedom they're talking about. So it's really important that we understand this is very simple, really. All of these issues are linked. I hate this term, single-issue politics. That is the worst garbage and sellout there is. Everything is linked. What's happening in Iraq, what's happening in the neighborhood down here, what's happening all over the city, all over the United States, those things are linked. They're coming, in many instances, they're coming from the same administration or the same politicians, same political system. Our problem is to eradicate the world system of capitalism. That's what we have to eradicate. That's a huge job. You know, I hear people talking about it all the time, but not really understanding how immense a job this is. Over the course of time, you will come to two realizations. One is that I got to give my whole life to this. I got to give my whole life to it. That's one realization. The other realization is this is too big, I give up. One of the two is going to happen. I'm serious now. I've seen the faces change over the years. And the reason that the faces change is because the people have not made the commitment to continue this struggle through all kinds of hardship. So when people are talking about, oh, man, you did 15 years in prison and you did this and that. Well, I had made the commitment through the years of hardship. I knew there were going to be years of hardship. Might even be years of death, even my own. But I had the commitment. And that's real important. You have the commitment. I think people in this society have this idea they want instant results. Instant results. We're spoiled. We want to have air. Well, it's coming tomorrow. Everybody's going to be free. Meet down on 10th Street. Didn't happen like that. You have to give your life. You have to put your time, your energies into this cause. You have to find a way to become part of this struggle. And when you're talking about peoples of color, I hear white radicals all the time talking about, well, what can we do to bring the peoples of color into our movement? That ain't the issue. The issue is how you connect with existing movements of people of color, how you encourage movements of peoples of color. That's one of the reasons we're doing this conference. And the reason we're having to do it as a people of color movement was from my own experiences, having been an anarchist for 30 years, and for years tried to see to it that movements would include peoples of color, would create even organizing groups specifically for that purpose, and been rejected over and over and over again, and not being supported by many whites within these organizations against those who were effectively excluding peoples of color. So now we're organizing our own movement. And we'll be part of the larger movement, but we'll have our own political tendency. It's really important to understand this. Autonomy is important. It's an important thing. So the issue is, how do you relate to movements that have their own polity? Because it ain't about just getting some black faces or some white brown faces in a room, and then they have no power. People have to have power within an organization. You have to empower people within organizations. And until you're ready to do that, all the other stuff is immaterial. It doesn't mean anything. It's about, we want to hear about the touchy-feely stuff. Isn't it all wonderful when we get black people and we have black faces over here we can point to? Here's Sue, and she's a native. Here's Robert, and he's a Hispanic, and here's his Bobby back there, and he's an African-American. We're diverse. They don't have any power. They can't say a damn thing, but we're diverse. You know, so we're not talking about that kind of situation. We're talking about people are living in communities. They're struggling in those communities. They need your support. They don't need you to come in and take over. They don't need you to come in and tell them what to do. But they can use material aid. They can use an ally on the outside. And there's a technique involved. For years, I've tried to, and I'm not the only one. There have been others, a tendency of us who have tried to get the anarchist movement moving in the direction of doing community-based organizing. Because you can't, I don't know why people think that if they're in a room and it's just them in this room and it's just their people who look like them or who think like them or who are from their social and economic strata, that this is going to affect people in the parts of the city, in the parts of this country that are being shot and killed by the police, that are being starved to death, that are being subjected to all kinds of terrorism by the American government. And it's important to point that out again. There's the terrorism has always come from the American government. I mean, in my lifetime, the only terrorism I've known of is the Ku Klux Klan and the Ku Klux cops. Those are terrorists. And the heads of state and the boardroom presidents and the rest of them that sick them on us, those are the terrorists that I know of. I don't know about some Middle East, and I should be afraid of the people in the Middle East, and all the people I'm afraid of are in this country. So we should not get caught up in waving the flag and racist hysteria and all this stuff. We should not get caught up in that. But more importantly, should we not get caught up in it? We should organize against that. You know, it's one thing for me to come here and just talk to you. Oh, that was wonderful what you said, and I'm going back to be a racist tomorrow, and don't worry about it, but it was a wonderful talk. No, we need people to get out in the street and to challenge this. It's like someone said, not in our name. Well, not in our name racism, not in our name police brutality, not in our name poverty. All this other stuff that the government is foisting on peoples of color have to be dealt with as well, not just not in our name in Iraq, not in our name in this city where people are starving to death, where people are sleeping in the street without proper food, clothing, and housing in one of the richest countries in the world. Everywhere Bush goes and everywhere that the establishment goes, we should be on their ass. You know, like I like the fact that the anti-globalization movement is on the case of the Capitol. Every time they'd have a meeting, they'd be on their case. I'd like to see it done in every city in the country. I'd like to see it so that they couldn't even conduct business in this country at the city government level, at the state government level, without somebody coming in there raising hell about poor people in the street, without somebody raising hell about being shot and killed in the street, and there's upwards, as they put it, of 1,000 every year being killed in this country. I'd like to see people talk about this stuff and challenge these people so that they get up and get their tongues loosened to tell some lies. Somebody get up and say, well, what about so-and-so who was shot and killed down here? And you have supported this. You're a racist. Somebody needs to challenge these people. Yeah, they're racist, and you need to challenge them. Not let them sit up and tell these lies and let this system continue to perpetrate this stuff. So organizing, and it's a revolutionary organizer. And let me be clear what I'm talking about. I'm not just talking about somebody trying to get a stop sign. That's not enough. The stop sign I want is to stop the system from abusing and terrorizing the poor and peoples of color in this country. That's the stop sign I want. And we need to get a movement together that can get that stop sign up there, that can bring a halt to these things, these abuses. And I don't know, somebody was saying, well, I was coming out to speak about something, some other thing. You know, I always talk about what I want to talk about. You brought me here, but, you know, nobody effectively controls what I say, and it's always important to me is to be able to say what you mean. You know, it's amazing in this period that there are very few people will tell you the truth and tell you what they really think. It's just amazing. See, I'm not concerned about being a celebrity, about being everybody's friend. I want to tell the truth, and like Malcolm X said, let the chips fall where they may. Because my mother used to tell me, it's only if you take bitter medicine can you get well. Sometimes the truth is bitter. You have to see that. You have to understand it. There's a long legacy of racism. It isn't just that people of color are going to accept white folks coming down in their neighborhood. I'm a good one. Well, how in the hell do they know? You know, you've got to demonstrate. You've got to put your ass out on the line. And so this is not a church, so I can curse. Even if it was, I'd curse. You know. But you have to put yourself out there. You have to be committed, and I can't say that enough. You know, when I started doing this stuff as a young black man in the South, 10 years old, And it was a whole generation of us were radicalized by that period. That's an important understanding. People said, why can't you create that now? Because there was a movement that had arisen and that ultimately touched millions of people, and that movement was committed to bringing a halt to the system as it then existed. Now, I am not here to argue and debate about the flaws in this movement and the limited goals ultimately and all that kind of thing. I'm just here to tell you that that movement changed the world that I grew up in. I wouldn't be here talking to you in Texas today because of laws of segregation and white supremacy. The Ku Klux Klan was struck right in and closed this place down. So I can say that I've seen differences, but I haven't seen the death of racism. And somebody said, we're here to end racism. Well, you won't end it if we're sitting in the room in touchy-feely exercises. Oh, Lorenzo, it's wonderful what you're saying. I love it. It's great to see you up there. Or, I'm not a racist, but I played one on television. You know, but I'm just saying, it's ridiculous. We can talk from the standpoint of empty phrases and empty gestures. And so this is a challenge, really. What I'm doing here is a challenge. I'm not here to praise you. I don't think you've done nearly enough yet. We have to build this movement, and we have to deal with the conditions of oppression. This state, Texas, leads the United States in terms of executions. We need to build a movement to build for a moratorium. We need to do that. This state, Texas, has the black population goes to prison 10 to 15 times the white population. And these are not my figures. They actually come from research organizations. So you want to know how racism really operates. There's statistical proof of how it operates. There are 2 million people in the prison system. There's some 6 million people in the so-called criminal justice system, which includes the prison system. There are thousands of people who get killed in this country every year. I pointed that out. And this is the fashion how the system works. This is racism. This is the kind of thing that has to be challenged. I'm not worried about what some white person says or what they've got on their mind as an individual. I'm worried about the state. I'm worried about the machine which perpetrates these crimes. That's what I'm worried about. And so from that standpoint, it's about dismantling the state. It's about dismantling capitalism. It's about dismantling racism as part of that, as an important part of that. But you can never get to defeating racism, or defeating capitalism, I should say, without dealing with racism, because this system was founded upon racial slavery, upon the terrorism, the genocide of peoples of color, the theft of their lands. You cannot create some fictional scenario that doesn't include that. That is a betrayal of the worst sort. You yourself is indulging in a form of racial obscurantism, which means that you're obscuring the facts of history. I don't know what else I'm supposed to be up here saying, and you can ask questions and so forth. I didn't want to get up here necessarily to talk about myself and my own past. I guess to some extent that's important, but I wanted to give you some insights, what I was thinking at the moment. And I'm always thinking, which is an important thing, because some people stop in 1968. They're there. They're dead. They're just a hunk of flesh still walking around, but they're dead. They are, like my man said, they are a dead motherfucker. And as I said, this is not church. So if you're offended, good, you know, but this is not church. And I talk like this every day. So, you know, they say I don't put on any pretense of what I think about. Maybe sometimes it's gotten me in trouble. Usually it's gotten me in trouble. I don't put any pretense on. This is the way I talk all the time. And this is what I say. You know, I write it and whatever. If I got the energy, I'll do it. To me, the fact that I'm still here and able to even say these things, even if I'm a marginal figure, and we're still part of a marginal movement. Some of us think that, well, we're part of the anti-globalization movement. We've shown the world we can do this, that. We haven't stopped anything yet. We haven't stopped it yet. They're still killing folks in the third world. They're still killing folks down in the ghetto. They're still arresting people and subjecting them to racial profiling. They're still doing all this stuff that the government does. And now they're getting ready to do more because they're passing Patriot Acts and all this other garbage. And I'd said a long time ago, what are the things that this movement against the war has to understand? Is that this is not a movement just against this war. We need a movement against a police state. We have to talk about a movement against a police state. We have to talk about a movement against capitalism. Against capitalism, the capitalist system that makes all this stuff possible. And although some people may not understand it at this moment, they may disagree with you, over the course of time, the truth will tell. Millions of people will be radicalized. And I think that that is effectively what we're seeing. Millions of people are being radicalized because of the events in Iraq. And then when the attack takes place, and I don't think they're going to call it off, to be quite honest, when the attack takes place, even more people will be radicalized, not only in the Middle East, but even here. I mean, somebody wrote me a letter from Germany and talked about how after the demonstration there was a train leaving Germany with military armaments and equipment for the Middle East. And three young men somehow stopped that train. Stopped it. And they had to get all these police and the army and everybody, for three little guys now, three guys, they stopped this train. Now I'm saying to myself, if three could do that, what could 30,000 do? What could several million do? You know what I'm saying? If three could stop it. And I think that we're going to have to recognize this is where we need to go. We need to become ever more active. I'm not telling you at this stage to pick up rifles or all this kind of stuff. I'm not telling you should do that. But I am saying that you're going to have to take whatever tactics are necessary to bring this to a halt. You're going to have to do it. Some people are dogmatic, nonviolent, whatever, and I respect that, but don't look for me to do it. I'm not getting beaten in the head. I learned that a long time ago. That's not where I'm going. But at the same time, I respect those who are willing to put their lives on the line. Respect me for not believing in that tactic. All right, I am done. You can ask questions or whatever. You can say goodnight, knock adios, and go to sleep, whatever. Thank you very much for coming out.